Great. We are on Samach Tezamet Aleph, second line on the page. Oy Rami Bar Chama, the end of the second line. Rami Bar Chama has four questions altogether. Yesterday we asked the first of his four questions when we discussed the issue of Shtei Alecha Mayoshi Atiru Shalo Kesidron. Can you use last year's grain from before last year's Shtei Alechem were brought? Can you use that for this year's Shtei Alechem? So today we're going to get his second, third, and fourth questions interspersed with other discussion. But we begin with a discussion about the stages of growth for grain, or for fruit, actually, in order for it to become permitted with the Omer and the Shtei Alechem. Rami Bar Chama asks a question about fruit on the trees. We talked about yesterday not using fruit for the Bikurim, not using fruit for Karbanos, like not using wine for Nesachim, until after the Shtei Alechem. So boy, Rami Bar Chama asks a question. Shtei Alechem, Hanatsa Sharia o Hanata Sharia? When you're telling me that new fruit may be used for Nesachim only after the Shtei Alechem are brought, at what stage does the fruit have to be in order to become permitted with the Shtei Alechem? Just like regarding grain, we say Hashrasha when it takes root. What's the stage regarding fruit? That's my question. Hanatsa Sharian, Rashi says, Sheinetsu Kodem Lahem Ochanata Sharian. Is it that the blossom has to come out? That's the stage of Hanatsa. Or is it Chanata, which is a ripening already? Chanata Havi Peri Yosem Hanatsa. At the stage of Hanata, it's more of a fruit than at the stage of Hanatsa. The Shita Mekubetzis is the one who spells out that we're talking about their use. If you take a look at Shita Mekubetzis Aleph, Hanatsa Sharyan, Mashma de Peros Ha'ilanami Talia Bisharyusa Shtei Alechem. It sounds like you can't bring fruit of the trees until after the Shtei Alechem. And when we said earlier that if you did use fruit for Nesachim before the Omer, it's still kosher. That's only b'diyevet, but it's really supposed to wait until after the Shtei Alechem. Little known halacha. So our question is it Hanatsa or is it Hanata that matters? Fourth line in the Gemara, my Hanatsa umay Hanata. Oh, wait a minute, which Hanatsa and which Hanata are you talking about? Ile ma Hanatsa de Peira v'Hanata de Peira, if both of these are actually references to development of the fruit. Hanatsa I explained as the blossoming of the flower, but we're going to have to take it as the first formation of the fruit. And then Hanata is when the fruit has formed a little bit more. Hashta hashrasha sharia Hanatsa v'Hanata mibaya. He says, I don't understand. When you're dealing with grain, we say that just taking root is enough. That's a very, very early stage, right? When the grain takes root, you don't have any edible product. You have nothing. That's very early on. So why by fruit should I have to wait for a stage like Hanata, which is really much further along in the process? Ela Hanatsa de Ale, v'Hanata de Ale. Rather, what we're talking about is the leaf on the tree. That's what we're talking about. The first formation of the leaf or further growth of the leaf. Mi havi ki hashrasha olo. Is that the equivalent of hashrasha or not? To which the answer is teiku. But one of many that we're going to see here. But that's our first question. Second question within this discussion of stages is the status of grain that was uprooted and replanted before the Omer. And the Omer came along before it could re-root. In other words, if I had grain that grew, it rooted properly, it had hashrasha, and then I picked it before the Omer, and I put it in a jar somewhere in my kitchen, then with the Omer, that grain would become permitted. Everybody agrees with that, okay? If I grow it, and I pick it before the Omer, it becomes mutter. It's not as though it has to be in the ground at the time of the Omer. So if I pick it, and instead of putting it in a jar, I then replant it, but it didn't take root yet, do I view it as it's sitting in a jar? The jar just happens to be in the ground. It's the same thing as any omer of any grain that took root before the omer and got picked and put in my kitchen. Or do I say that by replanting it, you've now started the cycle again? And therefore, if it doesn't take root before the omer, then in fact it's usser. That's the question. Do I view sitting in the ground as the same as sitting in a vessel in my kitchen? That's what the Gemara wants to know. Boy, Rabba Bar Rav Chanan. Rabba Bar Chanan asks, Chitin shezeraan bekarka. If I had wheat and I planted it in the ground, Omer Matiran, Oein Omer Matiran. Does the Omer permit it or not? And they ask, Hey Chidami, what's your case? Ida Ashrush, Tareda, if it already took root, then I know what the rule is. Idlo Ashrush, and if it did not take root, Tanena, I also know what the rule is. Disnan, look at the Mishnah. Imishrishu kodem la Omer, Omer Matiran. Vimlav Asurunachiava Omer Abba. If they take root before the Omer works, and if not, they're Asur until next year. In other words, what's the unique case? Right now, the only way we phrased it is you planted wheat in the ground. Does the Omer work for it or not? That's easy. Everybody can answer that question. The answer is, did it take root before the Omer or not? No, it's more complicated. Lo, tzricha dechatzdinu vizarinu kodem laomer. The case is the one that I outlined. You planted it, it rooted, you picked it, that's chatzdinu, you cut it down, and then vizarinu, you planted it, again, kodem laomer, before the Omer. V'asa Omer v'chalaf alayu, and then the Omer came along. And the question now we have to know is, ma hulanakute umechol minayu? Are you allowed to pick it after the Omer, but it still hasn't taken root, and eat from it? Kiman deshadya bekadadamya visharinu Omer. Do we say it's just like it's sitting in a jug, and it's mutter? Odoma batilahu lagabe ara. Or do I say, no, it's batal, it's considered to be part of the ground? The replanting started the count all over again. So that's question number one. Regarding the Omer, it's considered planted and it's aser, or it's considered to be in a kli and it's mutter. But this is not only a question. This question of replanted grain is not only a question regarding the Omer. We're going to see that it applies also regarding Ona and regarding Shavua, because really the fundamental question is this. Normally, plants are considered part of the ground. That's the rule ordinarily. For all the halachas for which we differentiate between movable items and land, planted things are considered part of the land. But here you have something that went through that already, been there and done that. It was planted, and it grew, and you picked it. So it already was separated from the ground. When you put it back in the ground, is that called a planted item, and therefore it's part of the ground again, and for all purposes, for all halachos, it's part of the ground, or not? So we're going to see two other applications besides the Omer one. Yesh lahen ona, o ein lahen ona, do the laws of ona apply? Ona, remember, you're not allowed to profit more than a certain amount, and if you do, the sale is automatically void. So will the laws of ona apply, or not? Hey Chidami, what's your case? Because our rule is that Ona does not apply to land. Ona does not apply to Karka, thank you. So the point is, will Ona apply here? Will we say it's not part of the ground? It's just like it's sitting in a vessel in your kitchen? Or will we say that it's part of the ground, and therefore Ona is irrelevant? So the Gemara asks, well, what kind of Ona are you involved with here? Because remember that if there's any sale of the land itself, then Ona can't apply. Having nothing to do with this plant, You already introduced the land. Hey, Chidami, so what's your case? If the case is, the worker claims, or the worker, the person who developed the land, claims, I planted 6 kor. Rashi says we're dealing with kor measures, which is as good as any when you're dealing with seeds. I planted 6 kor of seeds in the ground, is the claim of the person selling it. And the va'asu sahadi, along came witnesses, va'amid lo shada ba'la chamisha, and they say, no, he only planted 5 kor in the ground. And therefore, as Rashi points out, the shear is the shear for Ona. It's the 1/6 shear. So that's your Ona case. V'ha'amar Rava, but didn't Rava say, kol davar shebemida v'shebemishkol v'shebeminyan, that which is mida, which is measured in a volume measure, mishkol, which is weighed or which is counted, afilu pachos michdeyanach ona chozer. Even if he doesn't have the shear of ona, even if ona doesn't kick in, it doesn't matter. It's called fraud, and the sale is reversed. If you take a look at Rashi, called avishimamida, kevan dekapid. Since you're dealing with something that people measure or count, lo machil. They are not mochel. They don't forgive any amount that's incorrect. If you try to sell me apples, okay, and you tell me here are 10 apples, and in fact there are 9 apples, it doesn't matter that the shear of fraud was less than Ona. We count out the apples and we say, no, you didn't sell me what you said you were selling me. Even if it's less than a sixth, Rashi says. The law of onah won't even apply for you to say, well, the sale is valid, but you have to refund the onah if it's only 1/6. The whole thing is void. So therefore, that can't be it. The Gemara says.
Why can't you say it's a standard case? Would it make
the
sale that something is only worth a certain amount and you sold it for more? Not measurements. Just that it's worth, let's say, $100, and you sold it for more. Than
right. That's basically what we end.
Case.
Right. That's basically what we end up with.
Okay.
Ella da amar lei shadoi bakidaboyalites, where he, instead of giving a measured amount, he said, I planted it appropriately. Whatever is appropriate for this area of ground, without overplanting and without underplanting, that's what I did. So it's not a measured amount. And I want you to pay me for it. Va'asu sahadi, and the witnesses came along, and they say, no, he did not plant it properly, he did not plant enough. So he's charging for more than it's worth. Do I say there is onah because we view this replanted produce as though it had just been put into a receptacle somewhere? It's not part of the ground, and therefore onah is relevant. Or maybe not. Maybe it's nullified to the ground because it's considered to have been replanted. That's our question here. Again, the fundamental question is when you put something that has already grown back into the ground, is it now part of the ground? It's considered replanted, or is it considered as though it was sitting in a vessel somewhere? And then the third question, nishbon aleihen or ein nishbon aleihen, it's also part of the same discussion. We know the rule is ein shvuah bekarkos, you don't swear for claims involving land. What about a claim involving these seeds that you replanted? Nishbon aleihen or ein nishbon aleihen, do you swear for that or not? Kedishadya bekada damya uvemetadli damu uvenishbon aleihen, do I view them as though they're sitting in a receptacle, and therefore they're just like movable items? They are movable items, and therefore you would swear on a claim involving them. Or maybe they're nullified to the land. They're like land. You don't swear. To which the Gemara says, our second of the day, teiku. Okay, we're now about 2/3 of the way down the page.
Is there a shtar here?
Well, we don't swear about shtaros either. Yeah, Einish Ban al Shtaros either. Just as good. No, we don't swear for Karka, we don't swear for Shtaros.
Don't you
know
Shtar with Karka?
No, you could do Chazaka, if you're acquiring Karka. But in any case, in the discussion over here, they're specifically looking for a case in which the land is not being transferred. It's only the seeds that are being transferred. Because if the land is being transferred, then for sure there's no Onah and there's no Shvua. We're trying to separate out the two. Okay. So Rami Bar Chama asked his third question. We weren't able to answer the previous one. Maybe we'll get better luck with this one. And here we get to strange grain. That's our discussion, and the next discussion here is going to be strange grain. So here we go. Rami Bar Chama's question is this. Chidin shebeglale bakar, usaorin shebeglale behema mahu. If there is wheat that's found in the excrement of an animal, the barley that's found in the excrement of an animal, they distinguish bakar behema just because of the diet of one versus the diet of the other. Rashi says bakar darko lechol chitim shar behema kigon chamor vegamal darko lechol saorim. So different animals are eating wheat and barley. Mao, what's the law? What's the status of that grain? So the Gemara asks, well, lemai, as far as what? What's your concern here? And if your question is, do I consider this food such that it'll communicate to Mas Ochlin? Tanena, we already know that rule. We've learned chitin shebirei bakar usaron shebiglale behema, wheat and barley found in this species. If you plan, I want to eat this wheat and barley. Hopefully, after washing it. Ein metami. Rashi says,
"No, you made
machshava." Oh, Bodin Bari, right? Oh, you know why? You know why? Because he doesn't want a maisa. That's why he doesn't want a deed. It's machshav oriented. Thank you. So, ein mitami tumas ochlin. So, in that case, they won't communicate tumas ochlin. Lekta la'achila. Once you do an action, then mitami tumas ochlin. Then they're going to communicate tuma. In other words, thinking about it while you haven't done an action is irrelevant. You have to do a physical action to convert it into food. But the point is, we have the law. So your question can't be about Tumas Ochlin, Rami Bar Chama. You know the answer to that one. El Leminachos, and if your question is, can you use them for a mincha? Pshita de law, of course you can't. Why? Right? The pasuk we did not quote when we talked about the bread in between the legs of the animals, where we just said, well, that's mos. But here we quote the pasuk from Malachi. Try bringing this to your pacha, to your human king. See if he'll accept you. See if he'll show favor to you. He's not going to be very happy when you bring this. How in the world can you think you could bring this as a carbon to Hashem? Lo tzricha denaktinu v'zarinu v'kaboy la'asui menachos minayu. So we say it's where it's already been processed a little bit further. You picked it, you planted it, and now you want to use it for a mincha. You want to use the end product for a mincha. My, what's the rule? Mishun demi'isusahu v'kevin dezarinu azil me'isusayhu. On the one hand, I could say the reason why it's considered inferior when we say hakriveu nalafach lasecha, you wouldn't bring this to a human king, is because it's repellent when it's been an excrement. However, now it's been replanted. And now, it's not disgusting anymore. You fertilize your plants on purpose. So I don't have an issue here. Oh, Dilmar, perhaps that's not why we rejected it. Maybe the reason we rejected it when we said akriveu na lefech lasecha was mishum kechishuso, is because it becomes weak. Rashi says in the digestion process, in the animal, it's exposed to acids or whatever inside the animal that weaken its ability to produce good grain. It's now not. You won't get good wheat out of it. V'ashanami kechusha, which is still going to be true even after you have replanted it, and therefore you shouldn't be able to use it. To which the Gemara says, yet again, take a rejected. We don't have an answer for that one either. We're 0 for 3, I think, on Roy Rechaman. So that's what we want to know. Maybe the first one that we did yesterday, we actually had an answer. Maybe that didn't dent in teku. So So that's our answer to Rami Bar Chama. We don't know. But that's okay, because Rami Bar Chama has a fourth question. Boy, Rami Bar Chama asks this question. Pil Shabala Kafifa Mitzris. You have an elephant, and we just use an elephant as a large animal. That's only our purpose in this discussion. This has nothing to do with the Toronto Zoo. The Pil Shabala Kafifa Mitzris. This is an elephant that swallowed a basket. Mitzris does not mean Egyptian. Mitzris, as Rashi tells you, means Mitzurei Dekel. It means that you made it from palm branches. The point isn't an Egyptian basket or Egyptian elephant. The elephant swallowed a basket. The kia derech beis harei, and then it excreted the basket out whole. So mahu, what's the status of the basket? So again, the Gemara asks lamai as far as what. If you're asking, does the basket lose its tumah? Because it's now been, it's gone through the animal system, and maybe now we'll consider it kli galalim, a kli that is excrement. He says, Tanena, we already learned that. Kala kelim yoredin lidei tumas and b'machshava. Kelim become able to receive tumah even with a thought. If I think, aha, this is now usable for me, then even if it's not physically complete yet, I'm sorry, no, Rashi says we're talking about where it has already been processed to the stage where it is usable. Once I plan to use it, that's good enough. Now it can receive tumah. And they don't leave their status as being able to become tame unless you actually physically change them. And here our whole point is it went through the animal intact. So therefore, it should retain its tumah. Sorry? So that's a good question. Come back to that in 1 second. So the Gemara answers, lo, tzricha, that's not our case. You know where we needed it? De bala husin. The case is where the animal swallowed the raw materials. That's what we're talking about. And then it excreted the raw materials. Ve'abdinu kafifa mitzris. And then afterwards, somebody, some enterprising person, collected them. You know, they have the coffee they make out of the civet cat's droppings, right? So that's what somebody did here with this basket. He took the materials here, and he turned it into a basket. Pretty basket. May have an equal. Would this count as digestion of the materials? And therefore, have a leg, kiklei galalim, kiklei adama, bein mekablin tuma. And therefore, we will call this kiklei galalim, and or like kiklei adama, which do not receive tuma. Tosis discusses the fact that we generally assume kiklei galalim is kalim made from excrement. However, there is a Rashi elsewhere, not where he quotes it from, in the margin they give you the accurate source, where Rashi says that galal is stone. Like if you think of Kasher Avera Galal in the beginning of Bava Kama, where they talk about they try to define Maveh and Mavir, and they say that Galal there they use to refer to marble or to stone. But here, it's clay golem is clay kelim from excrement. Tosfos also discusses clay adama as a side note, whether that's talking about kelim made from pieces of stone or whether it's a kli cheres that wasn't fired in a kiln. But either way, we have a classes of kelim that do not receive tuma. Do I say that if the raw materials pass through the animal, now those count as golem? In other words, let me refine the question further. The clay golem that don't receive tumah, does that mean a kli made out of presumably petrified excrement of the animal? Or does it mean a kli made out of something that went through the animal system? Like here, where the raw materials went through the animal system.
Not the chidur, when the behem ate it, isn't that equal to? Isn't that equal?
Why don't we ask the same question over there, you're asking?
No, I'm not saying that. We're saying when he eats barley,
yeah,
and then it comes out there ready,
right.
It is considered still chidur.
Right, because it wasn't digested. It came out whole.
So why the chutzpah? Why is that digested? Why is that different than the...
Right, I think it's a variation on the same question, which is why it's brought here in the Gemara together.
I think that would be the same question.
Yeah, I think it's fundamentally the same question.
It's not a case where the elephant has miraculous intestines to turn it into an ambassador.
Correct. I actually looked at one Achron, I don't remember where I saw this, who made that point. He said, don't think this is where the elephant turned it into that. Yeah, I
why
think
does that make a difference?
Just because it stretches. Yeah, we're going to see another case that stretches the bounds of credibility. We don't need more than one. So he says.
You're just being funny, right, here?
And the language, it
specifies.
Right, no, but that's not the case. It's not the case.
What's the difference? Well, it's the basket.
Well, maybe because with your mice of turning it into a basket, you've then done something. Let's see what the Gemara says. Anyway, the Amar Mar Klei Avanim Uklei Galalim Uklei Adama Ein Mekablin Tuma Lomi Divrei Tarav Lomi Divrei Sofrim. They don't receive Tuma. Oh, Dima Lo Avi Equal. Do I say this does not count as digestion? So he says Tivsha Lei. You can resolve it. Mehad the Amar Ula Mishum Rishim. The following story: Maisa Ubalu. It should say Shnei Zeivim. The Shnei Tinokos. Two wolves swallowed two children. Be'er Hayardin. The discussion on Be'er Hayardin, you remember, is the Gemara in Tanis, where they're talking about tragedies that happen in a community, and at what point you start fasting, and what happens if a certain number happens at a certain time. Be'er Hayardin is not relevant for our discussion, but the point is that the two wolves swallowed the kids, and the kids went through whole. They passed away, but they went through hole. Uba ma'isav nechachamim v'tiru as abasar. And the question came to the chachamim, what's the status of the flesh? And the chachamim said that the flesh is in fact tahor, so it does count as digestion. So the Gemara says, yeah, but not, that may be unique to that case. Sha'ani basar derakich, flesh is soft, so I can say it's considered digested. The pieces of branches are not soft. Well, you know, the end of that story with the wolves, they said the bones are tame. So doesn't that tell you that here it's tame also? Not necessarily. Shani atzamos da kushay tfei. Bones are tougher than the branches. Now, you asked the question, Alan asked the question about the about what kind of tumor we're talking about here. So Sfasemis actually asks that question. The assumption here is that that we're talking about its ability to receive tumor. Is it considered a kli that would receive tumah or not? Not a kli that was already tameh. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Kelim, Perak Aleph Halacha Zayin, that if you swallow a tameh basket, not you, the elephant, we don't swallow baskets, but if the elephant swallows a tameh basket, it remains tameh. It's a tahor basket that would become clay avam, clay galalim, whatever, and couldn't receive nutumah. However, he doesn't like that within our Gemara, because our Gemara sounds like it should be referring to the case even where it was tameh when it went in initially. So the Rambam takes this as a discussion only about a kli receiving nutumah, but it doesn't sound like that from the flow of our Gemara. That's the Sfasemis's question here. Okay.
Actually, places in some of Tezumel, I ask my question. Bola Hutsu.
Yeah. Right. I'm sorry. He does ask that. I'm sorry. I'd underlined it, but I forgot. He asked the question, but he says, "Yishlomer Shani Tomas Oakland the Tali Beruia Leger or Lekelav Asam Hichazia Fil Leger," as opposed to bringing the proof from the Ze'evim Shabala, the Shabala Tinokos. You're right. He does mention that as far as the proofs that we bring. Why don't we bring that one as a proof for this?
That's right. To be eaten by somebody.
Right. No, that's true. He does mention that. Okay. So what we've seen so far is the issue of stages of growth, and when I replant something, does it now start its clock again or not? That was our first question. Our second question was grain that went through an animal. and then it was replanted. Could it be used for menachah? So it's also a replanting question. We went from there into the basket swallowed by the elephant. And now we get to the last case of strange grain, and it's grain that has been inside the clouds. And there's a machlokas, Rashi Tosfos, as to what exactly we're talking about. Boy, Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera asks about 10 lines down, 12 lines down in Tzemach Tesem Advez. Chitin sheyardu ba'avim mahu. What if wheat comes out of the clouds? That's my question. Rashi says it's talking about where the clouds passed over over the ocean, and they swallowed a boat filled with grain. And now the grain rains down. This may sound odd to you.
You have elephants making baskets. What kind of
right? Yeah, well, that's Harold. That's Harold's case. But you should know. You should know just in general from the physics of it that in general moisture coalesces in the air to form clouds around solid particles. You have solid particles at the base that helps cloud formation. That's when they talk about seeding clouds. That's the idea. I'm not saying that the problem is the seeds have to get up there somehow. The space shuttle didn't drop them on the way up.
Right.
So Tosfos gives me an entirely different approach. Right. Tosfos rejects Rashi's approach for other reasons. Not because he says it's unrealistic, but Tosfos says it's talking about a nes. Tosfos' objection is that if it's really grain that was absorbed from a boat at sea, then the halacha should be obvious in the question that we're going to ask.
It depends where it is. Eretz Yisrael, the chutzlar.
Right. Tosfos is talking about
the clouds make it holy. Was it the Kinneret?
Right. That's Tosfos' problem. His problem is where were your clouds? Right. And where was your boat? Right.
Kinneret.
Right, the big boat sitting on the Kinneret carrying grain from Tiberia to what? But that's Tosfos' question. So he says it's from a nace. But this actually matters. There's a very important difference between the two, because one of our questions is going to be, can you use it for menachos? So number one, we have a problem. The Gemara in Tanis says, Chavdalon Amid Beis says, you're not allowed to benefit from Maisa Nisim. So how could I use this for my mincha? The rule is be mashke Yisrael. You can only use that which you're allowed to eat. So the Sefer Ezum Mekoman, who I like to quote, suggests a couple of answers from Achronim. Either that maybe when you say you're not supposed to benefit from Maisa Nisim, that's not an actual prohibition. It's just good advice. So therefore you could still use it. Or mitzvos lav lehenos nitnu. So using it for mincha is not called benefit from it. That's one question. The other question is, though, that we don't use grain that's become chametz. Right, for a mincha. Right, your grain has to be unchametz. But here, it's sitting in the clouds. It's going to get wet from the rain. It's going to become chametz. So what do you do with that? So the Nodeb Yehuda asks that question and says, in Rashi's case, where it came off the boat, the answer must be that it's in sacks. So it's not just grain raining down out of the clouds, but it's actually in bags. According to Tosfos, on the other hand, since we're dealing with a miracle anyway, it descended without rain. It's just it rained grain, and that was it. Ilamaisa, this doesn't. Our question is not really about clouds and grain being evaporated or pulled up off of boats or whatever. But it's a fundamental question, part of our general question about at what point something loses its title. We asked if it was replanted, did it lose its title? If it went through an animal, did it lose its title? What if it went through a cloud? Does it lose its title? Take a look at the way the Gemara formulates the question.
Is this the maritime law?
Yes, very much so. Remember, there's even a picture in Rashi at one point about drawing the line from Har south and the islands that are within versus the islands that are without and what they're considered to be the property of. Absolutely.
So it can be part of Eretz Yisrael, even if it's...
even if it's offshore. Yeah. The question is how far, but yeah. So boy, Rabbi Zera asks, Chitin sheyardu ba'avim mahu. What about wheat that descended in the clouds? Lamai, for what purpose? Ilam anachos, if it's for a mincha, mailo. Why couldn't you use it for a mincha? Other than the questions we just asked. But why couldn't we use it? El shtei alechem mai. The question is, does it count for shtei alechem? Because, mimo shvo seichem ama rachmana. From your dwellings, the Torah says, lafuke dechutzala ares delo, which excludes outside Eretz Yisrael, aval da avim shaper dami, but the clouds count. Odilmar, perhaps mimoshvosechem davka. Maybe not. Maybe it means it has to be from your dwellings. Vafilu da avim namilo, and therefore you can't use the cloud grain. Umiika kiay gavna. To which he says, "What are you talking about? Has that ever happened?" Kida adi taya or kada adi taya nachisa leirum kizva chite betlasa parsi. There, in fact, was this certain merchant, this certain Arab merchant. Taya is usually not Jewish, but it's a merchant who had land. And he had a kizba height of grain descend over three parsa. Rashi says, Sherkarko Arach Gimel Parsaos, his land covered three parsa, and he had the height of kizba, which the margins, the Arach says, is one tefach. In Rashi's edition, if you take the parenthesized word, it may be two tefach, bezikifas godel, the height of a thumb. The point is that he had this happen, grain descended on his land. Lo and behold. Okay, maybe it was a prank. Boy, Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, new question now. This question is a little simpler to understand, although logistically it's not so easy. We asked before, I gave you the timeline on the sheet. Grain that grew, it was uprooted and then replanted before the Omer, right? That was one case. Now here's my question. What if the grain grew, it was uprooted, the Omer was then brought, and that permitted the grain, as it was, that we're okay with. But then you replanted it after the Omer, and it grew again. So do I say that the new growth goes with that which became permitted with the Omer? It's part of the old? Or do I say that your new growth is going to require an Omer of its own to permit it? Do you go with the Iker, with the core, or do you go with the Tosefes, the added part? And we're going to have three cases. There's going to be a fourth as well, but we won't get to it today. But we have three cases for which this may matter. Boy, Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi asks the question about 12 lines up from the bottom. Shibolas shevia shlish kodem laomer. You have a sheaf of grain. It grows to a third of its growth before the Omer. Rashi says that's important that we mention a third of its growth. Dechashiv gemar pri. It's considered to be ripened. For our purposes, it's now considered to be complete. It's not just fodder, but it's now fully grown, and therefore the Omer permits it. The Akra, the Gemara says, and then I uprooted it. Vishas lala achar Omer. After the Omer, I then replanted it. Vosifa, and it grew more. Mau, what will be the rule? Basar ikar azlinan visharye Omer. Do I say you go with the core piece of grain, and therefore the Omer permitted it? Odilma basar tosefes azlinan. Or do I go with the new growth? Vachi of Omer apa. And you have to wait now for the new Omer. The Shita Mekubetza says here that we're talking about where it grew a little bit, not where it grew the majority. If now I'm looking at it and the majority of this grew post Omer, then it's very clear that it requires a new Omer. The question is, can the little bit that grew be nullified to the core amount? To which he then asks, well then wait a minute, why don't I invoke the principle of Ein Mevatlin Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin, right? That which is going to become permitted is not batel. Right? That's a rule in general. If I have something that is going to become permitted eventually, then it can't be batel now. That's one of the explanations for why chametz on Pesach is not batel, because just wait till after Pesach. So here you should say the new growth is going to become permitted next year with next year's Omer, and therefore it's a davar sheyesh lo matirin. It's an interesting question. We can revisit it another time. But in any case, our question here is, your Omer grew a little, your grain grew a little bit. What's the deal? Do we say the new growth is batel or not? So we try to bring a proof for what we do based on a separate case. Tiv shalei meha, prove it based on this. The Amar Rabbi Avo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, from this that Rabbi Avo said, saying Rabbi Yochanan, Yalda shesivcha v'zikena uba peira. Is this a play on words? If you remember the Mishnah in Kalim, it talks about the sivacha, the net that women wore on their heads. And there's the net worn by Yalda, and there's the net worn by Zakena. So Yalda Shesivcha Bizakena is a pun on the Sivacha of the Yalda and the Sivacha of the Zakena, because young women had different types of hair coverings than older women. But the purpose for us has nothing to do with any women and their hair. It's talking about plants. I have older plants and younger plants. And the Yalda is a plant that is still under Arla. It's still within its first 3 years. And I grafted it to an older plant that is already mutter, that's after the 3 years. So I grafted Arla to a permitted plant, Uba Peros. And it already has Peros. Filu Hosif B'Masayim, even if it adds a portion that is more than 1/200th, so it's not nullified, theoretically, and therefore the new growth should be mutter. The new growth should be mutter growth, usser. It doesn't matter. It's actually usser. It's actually prohibited. The rule is that it's no good. So again, let me make sure that's clear, because there's an important difference between the case we just gave about the grain and this case about the arla. In the case of the grain, Okay, keep this in mind, please. In the case of the grain, the new growth is the problem. It's post-Omer, the new growth is Aser. And so I said, do you go with the old growth, which was Mutter, or the new growth that's Aser? Here, it's the opposite. The old stuff on the young plant was Arla. Right? It was Aser. The new growth that occurred when you grafted it to an older plant is Mutter. Because it's now growing on a post-Arla plant. So my question is, do I then say, do you go with the new growth or the old growth? The new growth that is Mutter or the old growth that is Aser? Which one dominates? Or a similar case. V'omer Rishon Bar Nachmeni, Omer Rabbi Yonasan. A third one. Rishon Bar Nachmeni says, Sayyid Rabbi Yonasan, Batzel Sheshesalo Bekerem V'ne'akar HaKerem. You had an onion. You planted the onion in the vineyard. Okay, so that's Kilei HaKerem, right? And therefore it's Aser. However, then the vineyard was uprooted, and the onion continued to grow. Even if it added more than 1/200th of mutter growth, usser, it's still going to be usser under the Kilei HaKerem banner. So therefore, you've now proved you go by the original growth, not by the added growth from the mutter situation, right? So should I apply this rule uniformly across the board? Do I say regarding the Omer that you go with the new growth that was post-Omer, and that requires its own? And with the Arla, you go with the new growth, which is in fact the other way around. Let's work our way from case three, where we actually had an answer. With the onion, you said you went with the old growth, and with the ikker, right? You went with the ikker for the onion in the vineyard, and therefore it was usser. And when you went, and therefore for the arla, you said also, I go with the ikker, which was arla. And therefore the new growth is usser also. It's also considered arla. So do I say in our case that you go with the ikar, which grew pre-Omer, and therefore it should be mutter? That's my question. Do we have a rule down the line that you go with the ikar? To which the Gemara says, no, that's exactly my question. He gufa, the end of the second white line, he gufa kamabayale. That's exactly what his question was. Mifsha pshita lahula rabbanan de baser ikar azlinan. Is it obvious to the rabbanan that we go with the core plant, loshna lakula veloshna lachumra, whether that ends up in the leniency like in our discussion about the Omer, or a stringency like in the discussions of Arla and Kilei HaKerem? Odumam v'sapuke misabke lahu, or maybe they're in doubt, so they said go with the ikar when the result was chumra. But if the result isn't going to be chumra, in our case it's going to be kula, we'll say go with the tosefes, go with the added amount. So once again, teku. Don't have an answer for that either, but we're going to continue with that discussion, actually, God willing, tomorrow.